All right. Hello, everybody. Give us a couple of seconds here for everybody to get dialed in. We're about a minute early, so give us just a second. Master Oliver, the recording has started, so I think we're good to go. I think I have everything all set up the way it needs to be.
Fantastic. I'll be on mute for half a second. Be right back. So who do we have on the call so far?
We've got a few. We've got Jeff Patterson. Jeff, I think you're on, right?
Yeah. Can you hear me?
I can. We can hear you fine.
Okay.
I'll probably mute in a few minutes here once we get if we get some background noise. But sometimes it stays under control. Sometimes it doesn't. It kind of depends. And we've got the New York Kung Fu guys. You guys are there, right?
Yep.
They got the crew. We've got a few others I don't recognize. Maybe just sound off if you like. Let me see here.
So we have both coasts represented here. Is that Alex or Shay or Dino group? Can you hear me?
We can. I believe it's Alex's group. I believe it's Alex.
Okay. And
I know Dino's guys are going to be in a few minutes. I just talked to them yesterday, I think.
Okay. So we've got Portland and New York on the call. So Jeff, both of you guys are our San Diego event. Jeff, if you have one pressing thing that you're trying to solve right now to accelerate your year, what would it be?
Probably get more fine-tuned systems on new student orientation and getting them settled into the culture of the school and getting them to the upgrade.
Okay. We just said a mouthful, but that's important. So are you talking about including the enrollment process or once they've enrolled?
Once they've enrolled they've already enrolled into the basic program.
Okay. Okay, so get them acclimated to what's going on and then prep them for the upgrade, which of course our primary objective in May in Washington, D.C. is the walking through that orientation upgrade process as well as, frankly, how you get staff members to do it that way. Okay, good. And Alex and gang, what's your most pressing issue?
So this is Christy. I'm actually filling in for Sifu Alex because he's recovering from surgery.
Okay.
sorry about that.
Okay.
But I think our most pressing issue is getting more people in the door and kind of fine-tuning that whole process. We're working on our website. We're getting our flyering systematized and automatized, and we're really fine-tuning our whole sales process, which definitely needed a lot of work, and we are getting a lot better, but it's still not where it needs to be. So I think that's probably our most pressing issue by far.
Okay. Well, aside from those two issues, have you come across anything that was pretty dramatic among the calls that you saw? Well, your calls are next week, right?
Yeah, they are. I had a couple yesterday, but in general, no. Other than I would say one thing, and I think it folds into what Alex's team, well, actually both of them, I guess, probably you right now. That I think what I'm experiencing with a lot of our guys is that from both a marketing and a new student kind of like quick start process, I guess, you know, like a renewal prep and that sort of stuff. Where they are right now, I think in general, and again, it's total general terms, is they're manually working it, but haven't yet layered on systems to help manually work it, you know? So you know, follow systems for new students, acclimating them to the school, getting them prepped for renewal, processes in place to get them prepped for the renewal, things like that. So I think that is probably right now our biggest opportunity with my group of folks. which again I think folds into Jeff's question, and I think folds into Alex's process as well.
Well, that hadn't been said. I had done a lot of calls this week, and I guess the main thing as a differentiator that had come up was, there's several schools, and I know in your case, we also several schools that are predominantly adult-oriented schools who are either implementing kids programs or thinking about implementing kids programs. That was true of Nick in Washington, D.C., who runs the Cross School. It was true of Crystal. They run predominantly adult Muay Thai school. And that ended up being a pretty big point of conversation. And Toby, let me throw this at you. If you're a predominantly adult program, which is true of both these guys, how do you feel about whether you should or shouldn't, implement a kids program in your school?
Well, I think it's too much of a blanket statement. I think it really just depends on what it is that you're trying to accomplish. I guess there's two ways to look at it, but. I would say just in general, and this may not be exactly the question that you're asking, Mr. Oliver, but let me take everybody on a quick journey into NATMA's past, right? Just as a sense of framing. And again, this may not be exactly the direction you wanted to go with this, but just as a sense of scope, let's take a look at this. One of the biggest mistakes, I think, that NATMA made in its past, and that is very common occurrence within a niche inside of an industry, is NATMA's mission 10 years ago or 15 years ago was to sell you a box of stuff, right? The little ninja program, whatever it is. And then it was their objective to try to come up with the next thing, the next program that they could sell to be able to sell boxes of stuff, right? Now, the problem with that, just in general, is that what we saw over time was, let's say, for example, a school had a core X program, whatever that program might be. But let's say it was a kids program, just for an example. So they had, like, this core kids program that was working okay. And that owner looked at the kids program and said, well, I'd really like to make more revenue. Let's add on a cardio kickboxing program. Let's buy the NATMA cardio kickboxing thing and install that. And then that gets them an extra couple thousand a month. And then they say, well, let's also get this little ninja thing and start teaching preschoolers and put them in the thing too. We'll do that, right? So then they buy that box. And then they say, okay, well, that got me a couple more grand. Let's do the next thing, cage fitness or whatever the case may be. Now, on the face of it, that sounds kind of like a decent idea because you're adding some revenue, right? But keep in mind, at the same time, you're adding two other things each time you do that. Number one, you're adding a layer of operational complexity. The second thing is you're adding systems that in some cases aren't designed to be an integrated system, right? It's not designed to be smooth and fluid, right? They're not all designed to work together. So I guess what I would say is this. Before I would be looking at adding a program, I would want to make sure that the current program I'm operating is optimized at a pretty high level, right? So if my objective is 80, $200 per student per month, right? 80% conversion from one lead intro, 80% conversion from intro to enrollment, 5% attrition or better, $200 per student per month. I think before I would want to add operational complexity by adding additional, customer bases, I would want to make sure that I've gone pretty far down the road of optimizing that core program first. Yes, however, is that you're it?
Well, yeah, and I think the other issue is, because I always start on it of how do I go get them, is if an adult-oriented school right now is, I can get probably as much traffic as I want from online sources, and that doesn't mean I should rely only on that. But if I then add a kids program, is the marketing funnel for, really, I believe, marketing funnel for women who want to lose weight through a fitness type of martial arts program, the marketing funnel for an MMA-oriented school of some sort, the marketing funnel for a kids program, are all three different. And so what I think people misunderstand about a lot of times is they think, well, you know, I just had a good-looking woman in a tank top, in a fitness outfit with boxing gloves, so all my kids had, I'm going to pull in the, you know, kickboxing crowd, or I have these MMA ads, and I just put a couple of cute kids in them, and now I've expanded my audience, which works the opposite direction, because it makes everything work worse. Now we have the barking dogs. But, my standard answer now on that is, you know, I personally love the kids program for a couple of reasons. I love it because it's the place at which you can leverage the price point to the highest level with the least resistance. It's also the place at which you have mom and dad helping a 7-year-old stay in the program. What's frustrating about the kids programs right now is you have to work a lot harder physically to go out and generate them than you did in the past. So right now it requires an awful lot more community outreach things. You're out in the elementary schools, you're out in the daycares, you're out in the community centers, you're out at fairs and carnival. And there certainly are media-based ways where you can spend money and get them, but it's not as easy as optimize your website and have a cute kids site and buy some pay-per-click, and then you get flooded with traffic. So I think it's useful to address that. The other thing, which you implied, is an awful lot of times is you're better off to be what you are and then to maximize it, really optimize it, than to try to go into a couple of other things that you don't know how to do yet. And so if I am really good at 7-year-olds, I don't think I should put a banner out front that says, you know, hardcore MMA and try to target 23-year-olds and speedos doing no-gi grappling, right? Because it's just so far afield from what I'm already good at that it creates dissonance and disrupts both markets. And certainly the same thing is true on the opposite side. You know, if I've got a great fitness-oriented environment, and then I say to myself, wow, I've got a lot of women who are, you know, 30 to 40 and have kids. In fact, the reason they're here is to get rid of baby weight. And now if I can get them to start bringing their kids in, wow, I mean, you know, I've got a double hit. Well, so many times, now you add what feels to them like a little gym kids environment to what was a really cool and trendy fitness place. And you kind of kill the buzz. So you've got to be very aware of that. You know, it's like, Toby, from your background in gambling, you know, Vegas really did themselves a disservice by trying to become a family destination. And then they figured it out and turned it around. But the whole idea of bringing the kids to a gambling weekend in Sin City, you know, really had a negative impact for a while, and they reversed that trend. So I think part of it is, you know, always be careful to become dissonant from where you're at. To use a different example, you know, if McDonald's suddenly decides it's going to start serving $23 filet mignon and carrying a selection of wine, you know, it not only probably doesn't get a lot of traction on that, but it takes a dent out of what its core market is. So you've got to be careful about that. But
let's go back. Over my phone completely dropped out. I still can't.
Okay.
I've got a full signal, and I can't make an outbound call. It's unbelievable.
That's strange.
That's very strange.
Is my background noise level okay?
No, you got a little bit, but I... Oh, is it?
Is it pretty bad?
Yeah.
Okay. Give me half a second. I'll shift where I can get...
You guys are breaking up real bad.
So, Toby, let's start addressing the how to orient the new students and get them working towards the renewal process for Jeff. And I'll be right back when I get a quieter environment here.
Sure. Well, sure. Well, here's what I'm working on with my guys pretty dramatically, or I don't know, pretty aggressively. I guess is probably a better description. number one is that, you know, the upgrade process, again, from a psychological and a strategic standpoint, when we, in our environment, in the Maha Karate environment, in the high-level character development for kids environment, which, again, the model can overlay onto virtually every, you know, environment. It's about psychological human behavior. It's not about a program, right? But it resembles my story about, you know, racing school, right? Where the initial program that I bought, you know, that you're buying, that you're enrolling in, is really like your psychological predisposition, your emotional understanding of the thing, is that it is basically a step to the real thing or to a bigger thing, right? And so I think in a lot of the guys that I'm working on these systems with pretty aggressively, the first piece of the puzzle is having that sort of understanding with the customer at the beginning of the relationship that this is a piece of a bigger thing. You know, this is sort of the prerequisite for, you know, for lack of a better description, this is like the associate's program on the path to getting your master's degree, or the associate's program on the path to getting your bachelor's, right? And the objective is bachelor's, but before you can get there, before you can get into that program, you have to, you know, qualify. You have to accomplish these objectives first, right? So I think first it's important to kind of set up the right psychology. The second piece of that psychology, please.
And
I know you're a bat.
No, I think I've got a quiet background now. But the what I was going to say is that the what you just said that you shouldn't skip over. What if you can do this in a ham-handed, sloppy way, or you can do it in a smooth way. And the smooth way is, and you said it, but let me reemphasize it, is all the way through the process is you're discussing ultimately what the outcome is for the student. In other words, they come in for the first introductory, and we're talking about, the kids' version is you're talking about, you know, Joey's 7 now, he'll be 11 when he's 10 or 11, he can be a first degree black belt. By the time he's 13, 14, he can be a second degree black belt. Many of the kids who start at that age end up working their way through high school, college, you know, helping teach karate even. Would that be cool? See, that's just like, you know, these instructors here. So I'm having that conversation almost from the first contact, and sometimes from the first contact. And then in the enrollment process, it's obviously the objective is for Billy to get to black belt and beyond. We start with the trial enrollment over the next few weeks. We'll be evaluating to make sure that we feel comfortable with committing to training as black belt and beyond. If so, we'll go ahead and approve him to be accepted into that level of training. See, and so that's before the enrollment and during the enrollment. And now when I go back to them, it's not like bait and switch. It's not I got you into a six-month program at X price, and now I'm trying to throw you a four-year program at X price, and you didn't know it was coming, right? Is in their mind, they're prepped for it all the way along the line, and they know what's coming. And in fact, it should be by the time you talk to them, it's a little past when, you know, they're kind of begging for information. So you really want it to be the psychology of the high school student trying to get into Harvard. And so I'm jumping through hoops, and I'm, you know, trying to schedule an interview, and I'm trying to figure out how to get there. And they have a sense of this is a very selective process, and I may be turned down, and I'm really, you know, really begging to find out whether you accept me or not. And the reason I say it that way is all the language you're using around it has to be, in your mind, you're constantly thinking of, and in your staff mind, you've got to constantly thinking that this is like admissions counselor at Harvard who's going to take 1 out of 10, and you want to have that language pattern. It's not the guy who's, you know, who's selling Toyotas, who's, you know, practically begging you to buy the thing right now because their salesman down. So the whole attitude of the school, the attitude of the instructors, your attitude about it, has to start at that point from day one. And again, if I set you up to think properly about it to begin with, you don't have much
blowback when it comes into a price increase, a longer contract, all that stuff, because they're expecting that there's the next thing and that they're hoping to qualify, and they're really seeing that it is valuable. On the other hand, if you just are so happy to have gotten a 6-month or a year enrollment, and so all of a sudden you got them to sign the deal and you got a credit card and they paid you some money and they're on billing, you're just so happy. And then you think in a month I'm going to come back to them and offer them something else. Well, that's why, one is, it'll be a really tough closing ratio. Because now in their mind, well, I thought I didn't have to deal with this again for a year. And, you know, you told me I was on a blue belt program. You know, why do I care about anything else until I get my blue belt? You know, you can very easily, especially a new program director is just so happy to get the enrollment that they miss the fact that there's more beyond that and that they have to set them up so that they think properly about it.
Well, and Michelle, you mentioned something too, I think. I think now we are getting background noise, but I think it's outside of us. So I'm going to go ahead and put us in Q&A mode.
Yeah, not me.
Yeah, so right now everybody's muted. You can unmute yourself by hitting star 6. We had enough background noise. I think it was time to, you know, kind of stop that for a minute. But so if you did have a question about any of this stuff, just hit star 6 on your phone and you'll be unmuted quickly. No big deal. But, you know, a piece of that, Mr. Robert, too, that I think is fundamentally important to understand is the term of the first program that you're selling them, you know, the term of the first program, it should be like, I hate to say it this way, but it's irrelevant to the decision, right?
Right.
Like it's literally almost not even discussed. Now, nobody, I don't think anybody on this call would misunderstand me. It's not about being deceptive or deceitful or obfuscating, but literally it's the fact that this program is a 12-month program has absolutely nothing to do with why they're buying. It really isn't even much in their head, right? Like really we do as much as we can to not make that be part of their psychology. So your phraseology earlier is obviously the phraseology that we make everybody use, right? But the term of the contract, the term of the enrollment, we never say this is a 12-month program, 400 to enroll, 249 a month. We never say that. We basically say, just in general terms, what you just said is, well, you know, obviously our objective is to get, you know, Billy to black belt and beyond. You know, typically it takes a student somewhere between 3.5 to 4 years to get to black belt, and then 2 years to get the secondary black belt. Now, this program is going to take him about, you know, a quarter of the way to his black belt, and, you know, whatever. Some phraseology like that. It doesn't tell them that it's a 12-month term, but it gives them some sense of the scope. And the 12 months is just kind of written on the deal, and we just kind of point at it later. You know, when it's time to sign the contract, when we've gotten the yes, 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 we've already gotten the yes to the monthly payment, we've gotten the yes to the down payment, and we've gotten the yes to the yes they want to do it, I guess, first. Then we, you know, when it comes time to do the paperwork, it's already kind of all filled out, and we just sort of stick it in front of them and say, okay, well, this just documents everything that we just talked about and agreed to. Here's the initial tuition you already paid. Here's the monthly tuition. Here's how that's going to work. And you're just kind of pointing at the whole thing. Go ahead and, you know, read through that and endorse that for me, right?
Right.
So
right.
It's not like they're, again, think about my racing example. I think it's a really good example for a lot of reasons. There are a couple places where it doesn't really hold up well. But it's a really good example because he never told me it was going to take me 12 months to get from a D to a C driver, right? And, in fact, I don't really even know, right? You know, you don't really know. It depends on your performance. It depends on a lot of factors, right? So that's how you want these guys to think about this thing. You want them to be thinking about this thing like it's this is my first step in the door. My objective with this program is to get my feet under me, you know, really get a good sense of what this thing is all about and try to get qualified for this next thing if I think it's a good fit. You know, I mean, that's really what their state should be.
Well, and if you take that to the next level, so let's take Carol's example, which has been real fix and starts with these guys trying to get them to implement, is if you don't value the outcome that you're getting for your own students very highly, then all this stuff is difficult. But if you're getting, if somebody trains with you for 3 or 4 or 5 years, they get to a very high level, if it's a life-changing thing and you are sincerely focused on, one, having them train for that length of time, but two is really getting them to, you know, to stay with you and have that level of accomplishment. Then you change your dynamics. So, you know, again, that goes back to, you know, my old thing. You guys have all heard it of, you know, if you close your eyes, you know, if I could take you back to the day you started martial arts, give you all the money back. You know, how about if I give you $1 million back to, you know, to not ever having trained? If all of your staff really believe that, if they believe that this is a life-changing deal, that you're going to have an incredible positive impact on people, then this stuff is fairly simple. On the other hand, if they believe that this is just a 45-minute fitness class that's really no different than working out at the gym or taking an aerobics class, well, now it's a problem. Or if they believe that this is just about, you know, if you train in this for 6 months, you've now really figured out a pretty good level of self-defense. And now if you want to go beyond that, there's some other, you know, some other thing, but it's all about, you know, the one time you need to fight. It's really about developing that skill set. See, those kinds of approaches to what it is you're delivering don't lead to, in all truth, it doesn't lead to an outcome that is easy for the staff to see and easy for everybody to see is priceless. So, but then the next thing is, going back to walking Jeff through this, is it then is about, you know, the like the Tracy schools and a lot of the Kempo schools used to, what they would do is they would do like a, you know, sometimes an 8-lesson or a 12-lesson intro pack. And the, you know, the intro would be maybe semi-private or private, and you're walking them through a real extended process before you ever ask them to enroll. And see, if you think about what that process was, what the problem was, is that they were taking you beyond where you were ready to buy a 6-month or a 12-month initial enrollment. And once I'm ready to buy, you need to let me buy. But the other side of it is that picture of what they were doing really is a pretty good model for what the renewal process should look like. And it doesn't all have to be private lessons. It can be in the group class. But if you think in terms of really they're going through an 8 to 12 intro lesson process to register for your highest level program with an intermediate step, which is a trial enrollment, that's the right way to think about this deal, right? So if you think about what you would do during an extended trial, you would schedule each additional appointment. You would know when they're going to be there. You would have specific times when mom and dad were going to be there for a child, or perhaps when the wife was going to be there for an adult man. You would have specific times when you're going to do progress evaluations and get them feedback. You would have specific assignments you're going to give them between lesson number 4 and lesson number 5 to help prep them more for the enrollment. And see, that's what you want this to be. Is so many times what we do is I do intro 1 or maybe intro 1, intro 2, sign you on a 12-month contract, give you the class schedule and say, come whenever you want. And now I don't know when you're coming back next. And then you kind of come in, you grab your ID card, or you scan your card, or you do your thumbprint, or whatever you do, and then you jump into class. And now, from an instructor standpoint, you're one of 30 people, and pretty quickly I start learning your name. But, you know, there's no sense to me that you're on lesson number 3 or 4 and you need this new homework assignment. And there's no sense to them that they're qualifying for anything other than coming in and taking class and hopefully enjoying it. Does that make sense? Jeff, is that on target for what you're trying to resolve?
Jeff, you are muted. You're going to have to hit *6. But judging from our conversation yesterday, Mr. Oliver, it sounds, I think that that's right. I think that's where he is.
Yes.
And in part, by the way, and in part, by the way, Jeff, just maybe perhaps Mr. Oliver to expand that, and I think it folds into what I'm describing too, frankly, ironically enough. But one of the things that Jeff kind of expressed too is there is a certain amount of logistics, you know,
mm-hmm.
manually managing all this stuff, you know, in an environment where he's doing 40 enrollments a month,
mm-hmm.
you know, 40 new students, sort of logistically, how do you manage all that, you know?
Yeah, I mean, nobody said it was easy, but you know, what I will say about that, though, is that it's easier if you treat them all like they're introductory and schedule their next appointment, know when they're coming in, give them a piece of paper or a specific assignment to do between now and next time to get up and running smoothly. Then if they just kind of show up whenever they want to, and you try to make the best of it when they're there. And so, ironically, the logistics become easier as you keep a tighter handle on them, if that makes sense. So when they're... The other thing I see a lot of times, and Jeff, in schools like yours, what I mean by that is schools that have multiple curriculums, more adult-oriented schools, what has a tendency to happen is, regardless of whether you're thinking about it this way, is the staffing starts to evolve towards kind of a health club model. And if you think of what the health club model is, you might have people out on the floor showing people how to use equipment and stuff, and you might have some personal trainers. But mostly what you've got is you've got the sales sharks up front that are signing people up, and then they're giving an ID card to them to let them use the facility, but then they don't really have any use for them anymore, so they never see them again. And it was something that Eric and I had evolved with them. Is, you know, they'd gotten this big operation, but what was happening is the program director and the instructor weren't communicating with each other about every student. And so now what was happening is the student goes on the floor, but without the backstory from the program director and what's going on and what they've discussed. And now in lesson 5, 6, or 7, the instructor knows what's going on, but the program director is off for the next new enrollment. And what you've got to create is a real interactive, symbiotic relationship with all the staff. But if, you know, I always picture you've got the head instructor and you've got the program director. The program director has to be communicating with the head instructor about each of the students and what they're trying to accomplish and getting feedback from them on how they've done on each individual class, what other support needs they have. And I often see it, the program director's out there tapping the instructor on the shoulder and saying, see Bill over there, you know, he's on lesson 4, I want to do A, B, and C between now and lesson 5, so then you and I can chat with him a little bit on his next stage in the progress. You've got to keep the staff very interactive. And the biggest part of the logistics is, again, all these things sound like they're more complicated, but what it does by being aware of it is it makes your life easier, not more difficult, because now you're not trying to pick up somebody as a prospect now for a renewal who's kind of cold, and you're trying to figure out what's going on again with them. You've maintained that relationship. Jeff, does that help a little bit?
Yes, it does.
So, from a standpoint of, and part of it, Toby, it's interesting. A lot of the feedback I've heard from San Diego that people like, and while I'm on that subject, I've heard a lot of feedback on your webinars already on the internet as well. Hopefully everybody in the call has been on those. You guys, we'd certainly welcome some feedback on the direction on that and whether it's been helpful. I know. I talked to Dave Moss, who's just loving it, and several of the other guys, Nick, was loving it. Several of the guys have given me really good feedback on that already, finding it very helpful and being able to implement almost immediately. But what I'm saying is, so the feedback I've heard from San Diego that seemed to stick in people's mind the most was kind of the offhand conversation about how you actually keep the numbers. And how, you know, at the end of the day, just talking to the staff and finding out what's going on and going through the names. I've heard probably at least 6 people tell me that was the thing that stood on their mind the most, that was most helpful, is, you know, we talk about numbers from a big picture of analysis, but oftentimes not from the standpoint of what do you do at 8 o'clock tonight to know what happened tonight, and how do you record that so that it aggregates into a weekly and a monthly total. And Jeff, to a great extent, that's a key component of what you're trying to accomplish. Is it's also why, by the way, I don't particularly like part-time instructors. You know, you're always going to have some part-timers who come in and help out. But if I have somebody who comes in from 4 to 6 and leaves, and then somebody else who comes in from 5:30 to 8 and leaves, you know, I'm sitting there by myself at the end of the night trying to figure out what happened and who did what to whom and what conversations were had. And, you know, if I have an instructor who comes in for an hour or two, you know, I mean, my only alternative, I guess, is to really sit down and debrief them at the end of every little, you know, two-hour shift. But it makes it very difficult to have the office and the floor working smoothly together. And to a great extent, the part-time instructors, you end up with a lot of them. They don't ever know the students' names. And, you know, maybe you have a class planner up there that they're supposed to follow, or in which case they all come in and teach whatever they want to do. But it's really important to have everybody engaged, knowing every student's name, knowing what's going on with them, and communicating back and forth.
You know, Mr. I think another part of that, too, by the way, is I've had this similar conversation a few times in the last couple of weeks, and I think simplicity is important, right? I like a lot of automation and technology and stuff like that to support manual efforts, but I think in a lot of these cases, you really want to be looking at simplicity. And when it comes to statistics tracking and statistics monitoring, I really like to have a physical thing to deal with in addition to software if I'm using software. So, for example, like, one of the big gaps in a lot of cases, this doesn't, you know, isn't 100% germane to exactly what our topic is right now, but one of the big statistical challenges that a lot of schools have is, how do I track the number of leads I'm generating, right? How do I track how many walk-ins and info calls happen? Because what invariably happens is somebody walks in and asks how much lessons are, the program director is engaged in talking to them, you know, they do the best they can to set the appointment, whether they do or not. In many cases, the person walks out the doors, and it had never triggered an activity to be tracked, right?
Mm-hmm.
So that specific example, I think that again, just as a lesson, as a piece of how all this stuff works together, and how, you know, we've discovered not just how to hope it happens, but actually have some tangible ability to track it, is that you know, trusting that they're going to go and log it into a piece of software is almost always a challenge. So literally the most simplistic version of any of this stuff, I think, for everybody that is useful is that, you know, you go to Office Depot and you buy those pink phone message slips that you get like 3 books for $1, you know, and you have them sitting by every telephone and by the front door, and every staff member is basically trained and, you know, beat with a whip until they understand that upon pain of death, no matter what happens, no matter what the outcome of the engagement is, I don't care if it's the mom who calls you 96 times a day asking the same goddamn question. I don't care what happens, but when the phone rings or somebody walks in the door, that pink slip gets filled out, and it gets stuck in the, you know, whatever, it stays in the book, right? So now at the end of the day or at the end of the week or whatever the case is, you know, at the end of the day at your post, you know, post-game huddle, you now take those slips and you can sort them out, you know, and you can say, okay, well, we had 2 walk-ins today. Interesting. Well, you know, what happened with this one? What happened with that one, right? So I think you really do want to think about simplicity. And even in big environments, even when you're dealing with 1,000 students or 1,500 students, I think having a physical, you know, attendance card, a physical tracking card that tracks at least their first, let's say, 20 classes or so when I'm putting them through the renewal cycle, at least that part of it, so that I have a physical thing, a thing that I can look at, and it says, John Smith, and your times, and I've talked to him once about his progress so far. You know, that sort of thing. I think just to keep it as simple as you can, I think is very useful in this type of a process.
Yeah, well, and see, especially when it comes to, you know, our first topic, which is the, you know, the renewal upgrade process and keeping track of them. Excuse me. You're much better off that they have the physical ID card that is pulled and turned into class, and now you're making notes on it all the way through, and maybe you have a little system where you check off box one, check off box two, check off box three if they've gone through the thing, check off if they've done the homework assignment. You're much better with that than to have it in the, you know, in the ether somewhere, in the software that you're kind of trying to keep track of. And, you know, Toby, as you know, I mean, nobody in the industry has done more of trying to automate and computerize and systematize. And, in fact, one of our Inner Circle members is still using the old Master Vision software. I forget who that was. But what I always found is if I have to have a human being at 4:30 or at 6:30 at night in the heat of battle, so to speak, meaning when you have students there, you have class going on, you have intros coming in, you have renewal prospects there, if I have to go sit down and stare at a computer screen, that's all time that I'm not talking to human beings. And, you know, to the extent that you have it in there, you have an Excel spreadsheet or you have a software product of some sort that's keeping track of it, is it all has to be, in my mind, pieces of paper on clipboards that I'm now dealing with the rest of the evening in most cases, and not trying to, you know, work with it off of software. And on a stats process as well, is, you know, the reality is that this is a pretty simple set of numbers. And, you know, having them on a manual, you know, little piece of paper on a clipboard, or having them in an Excel spreadsheet or, you know, a Google Docs spreadsheet is about as complicated as you need to get for most of these things. Is if you're just paying attention to what's happening every night. Now, that's not saying at all that you don't want to have a system where you put a lead in and it gets autoresponders forever and text message autoresponders forever and gets queued up for voicemails. I mean, that's a different subject. But from the standpoint of just keeping track of what happened and, frankly, keeping track of they walked in, made an appointment, have been in for a first, and now I'm going to have them in for a second, you know, it's really hard to get better than. Everybody just gets together, has a conversation, you pick off the thing, you put it in manually, and maybe you update the spreadsheet or update the software at the end of the day just to keep track of it a little bit better. But, Jeff, any other questions on Target right now that this has raised or not answered yet on that renewal process? Because it is very important.
No, not... I mean, I understand what you're saying, and it seems helpful. I'm just having difficulty assigning all of the tasks to people because it seems like I've already got everybody doing to their limit of what they seem they can do. They seem kind of like they're pressed for time to get done the things they're doing right now. So I really don't want to hire another full-time person just to take care of that. So that's why I was trying to figure out a way to automate it a little bit more.
Well, most of the upgrade process, and I mean, you can automate pieces, right? I mean, we have it where they get a sequential emails, driving them to web pages, get them to watch videos, all that kind of stuff. But if you think about any sale, doesn't matter whether it's enrollment or renewal, whatever, is, you know, the most effective sales process is talking to somebody face-to-face, followed by talking to them on the phone, followed by all, you know, big tools and so forth. And what you don't want to do is go towards easy to solve time management problems. And, you know, a couple of books I would recommend to everybody. One of them is 7 Habits of Highly Effective People. The other one is called First Things First, which is an expansion of the time management paradigm that Covey had in 7 Habits. But if you look at his time management paradigm, and Jeff, everybody is dealing with exactly what you're dealing with. But I think Covey's term was the tyranny of the urgent. And what their time management paradigm is that you put everything that you have to do into one of four quadrants. And quadrant number one is urgent and important. Quadrant number two is not urgent but important. Quadrant number three is urgent and not important. Quadrant number four is not urgent, not important. Is what happens in the day-to-day operations of the school is we get caught up in all of the urgent stuff, including a bunch of it that's in the not important category, and let fall through the cracks the most important thing in the school, which is the prep for the renewal followed by all the pieces that need to happen to make sure your retention is in good shape, right? And to give you an example, every instructor has the experience of you have 40 people in class. Of the 40 people in class, you've got 20 of them that are raving lunatics, fanatics, would show up your house to sit on your couch over the weekend because they just think you walk on water, right? And then you also have, out of 40 people in class, you have four that are just incorrigible, see the negative in everything, and probably should have already been, kicked out of the school for everybody's benefit, right? So just picture that every class you have those two extremes of the spectrum. And frankly, supporting either one of them during the average class time is not terribly important. What's incredibly important are the ones who are now attitudinally in the bottom third that are fixable to move them in the middle third so they don't drop out. And then to take the ones that are in the top third and move them into the renewal unless they're beyond that stage and already there. And so what happens when your instructors get really busy is one of two things is happening. Either the students are getting in their face, demanding time and attention, but it's not the ones that are important to be dealing with right then and there. And again, I don't mean to imply that any student is unimportant, but the ones that are raving fans who would stay all night and mop the floors for you, they all are always in your face and wanting attention, but it's not necessarily important to give it to them all the time. The other thing that happens is sometimes we've made our system for keeping track of what's going on too complicated, and what sounds good in a vacuum, oftentimes, when you get into the heat of things on the floor, teaching every class for the evening, that doesn't look so realistic. And so the motto for everything you do in the school is simplify, 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 simplify. And so, I've over the years had filing systems and software systems and controlling systems and books they put stuff in and all that stuff. And so many times, what I found is something that seemed like a good idea in a vacuum just created a more difficult life for the staff. So you want to be you want to be unrelenting in simplifying every system in the school. Does that make sense? And then on the other side, you've got to teach on that time management matrix of really what's important to every class. Every class, you've got the bottom third that without a little bit of spark are going to be there for one more class or two more classes and maybe not come back. And if you don't address and fix those right now, you're at 7 or 9% dropping out rather than 2 or 3% dropping out, right? And at the other end of the spectrum, you've had the ones that you've worked with and are prepped and are right at the precipice of being able and willing to move to that next level on the renewal. But if you don't deal with them today, then once they've passed the point of being ready to buy, it's not like they get stronger and stronger and stronger. They start riding on a bike. So it's an example that I used, Jeff, for our schools one time was one of the things that Bill Clark and I were picking in Century Forever, perhaps others too, to do this Century Direct deal so people just go online and order and drop ship. But my vision was years ago, I'm in there filling in for the program director, and Mrs. Jones is wanting to try on three different sizes of foot pads while my $20,000 renewal is walking out the door. Right? And
right.
So many times in the school, you have the equivalent of the $20 foot pad sale versus the equivalent of the $20,000 renewal. And if you don't really work to get rid of, You know, I've seen schools who are so proud of the fact they're selling $2 bottles of water, and they've got the program director up there, you know, collecting $2 for the bottle of water, and getting distracted from their role of doing renewals. Or they've got a receptionist there selling the $2 bottles of water, but the reality is that receptionist should be following up on all the intros they're scheduled for today, reconfirming them, should be greeting them on the way in, should be focused on the renewal prep process and confirming people for the program director. I mean, they've always got to be focused on the highest value activities. And, you know, there's no such thing as having the right number of staff and not having them all be busy. But a lot of times they're busy doing unimportant things. Is that helping, Jeff?
Yeah, that helps. It gives me some ideas to try to maybe try to fine tune that a little bit.
There was also, it wasn't you and I talking, somebody else, but we were talking about, they had asked the question of, again, big school like yours, but they had asked the question of, does it work to have a program director in charge of renewals and a program director in charge of enrollment? And you know, my response to that, and I've seen it tried, I've tried it, Eagle Valley tried it, is the problem that it creates is that this is a business of relationships. And so I want the person who developed the relationship, preferably on the first phone call, but definitely first time they walked in the door, to be maintaining the relationship up to and through the renewal, and then maintaining the relationship, frankly, you know, for the lifetime of the student, even though, you know, in truth be told, the instructor starts to maintain, you know, create a lot, awful lot more of the responsibility. I've seen it done the other way, where there's the program director in charge of the adult program that does, you know, intro, enrollment, renewal prep, retention follow-up with the adult program director in charge of the kids that follows them all the way up through. You know, depending upon what all you have going on, but it's the important component is not the function, it's the people. So if it's about having somebody track the individual people up through at least the first, first half a year, a year of their relationship, it's not about having somebody who does the functional specialty. Jeff, any other questions on that, or should we move on to our next conversation?
No, sir, that was good. Thank you.
Okay. Well, let it sit for a while. And then I think you and I have a follow-up later this week or tomorrow or next week, I don't know which, but we can hone in on it a little bit more. And, you know, let me just point out to everybody is, you know, I don't get an awful lot of questions on a weekly basis from people trying to hone in on small details. And so when we talk about something like this, there's always the 5% of the idea that's fuzzy. You know, be just, you know, very, you know, very free with ping at Toby and myself. Again, my only hesitation is that I miss a lot of emails. But, you know, if you sit down and write out a fax and have to plug it into the, you know, the printer, into the outlet to send it off, or, you know, send it on one of the three services, you know, I'll take the time to sit down and handwrite out a response and get it back to you or something like that. And certainly, if you're in the middle of a crisis, you know, don't let a crisis wait until a week from, a week from Tuesday in April to solve it. You know, if you guys are experiencing some kind of internal crisis, and several of you have had that, give Bob a call and we'll schedule a special time and deal with the crisis, not let it fester. But the other thing, Toby, I thought we should address is we have a whole bunch of people who are either, like in Alex Rache and his staff's case, really trying to ramp up their marketing because they're you know, they're in the most population-dense place in the planet, but really haven't been very effective at getting out and reaching people. Or we have several schools who are doing basically grand openings, second location, third location, fourth location. That's certainly true of Dino's and his staff. It's true of Eric and High. It's true of several others that I've talked to who are looking for that. And of course, the process is similar. So let's spend a little bit of time here on just how to aggressively double or triple the number of new people coming in the doors right now. If you were to pick three things for the adult market that have been working recently that you've seen, Toby, what are they?
Well, I mean, gross quantity of leads wise, in the adult market online right now is probably one of the most fruitful areas without a ton of, you know, manual labor, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, if it's Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu or MMA or kickboxing or something like that, even fitness, even in the fitness part of the niche.
Well, and that's Dino and their gang. That's their market. Alex and his gang. That's their market. They're both in the kung fu. Mostly adults, mostly men. Arena.
Yeah, exactly. So I mean, obviously, something like, you know, number one, and this applies to family schools too. You know, in the kids' market as well, but you really got to have the site. You got to have that thing, you know, built so that it can collect and manage, right? So I mean, I think that's almost a universal play. We got some background noise.
Yeah. Sounds like wind noise.
Yeah, I can't tell where from. Let me do this again. Okay, I think I may have got that. I don't know. But anyway, what I was saying was that for family schools and for adult schools right now, you know, I think step number one, it's a marketing staple in today's market. I think you've got to have, you know, your online presence structured the right way. It's got to be set up to, you know, source resell. You know, its objective is to capture a lead, put it into a follow-up sequence, at the same time try to sell them, right? So you've got to get that thing to capture leads. In the adult market, especially, right? Yeah.
And so, you know, stopping right there, everybody, you know, in any of the markets really should be taking advantage of the webinars that you're doing. And if they can't be on them live, you're recording them and putting them up for replay and chunking them down so they'll be available to all the Inner Circle and Peak Performer members on demand. Is that correct?
Yeah, absolutely. In fact, the first three are already up. The first two are already up. The third one will go up probably sometime today. So,
yeah. Well, one of the things that I think hasn't penetrated fully for some people is that your ideal would be to have somebody opt in, but then to immediately have them feel compelled to pick up the phone and call you.
Mm-hmm.
So if you can drive them to an inbound call, you know, in which you, like, answer your own phone, the better off you are. The second thing is, and it's what we try to do in Atmos case as well, is if you have somebody who's getting the leads in real time, who can make an outbound call while they're on the site. Now, what I will tell you, floating in and out of our own school, is, you know, 15 years ago, I could go get 200 leads at a scout show. And on Sunday night, we could probably get hold of 75% of them by phone. And what I'm seeing now, one of the trends, and, you know, I've known it intellectually just by looking at the numbers, but, you know, nowadays people just don't answer their damn phone. And so the good thing is we have an awful lot of other sources. You know, the text messaging thing, I think it's a home run. Broadcast voicemail helps. You know, I mean, if you're going to make 100 calls and mostly get voicemails anyway, you might as well, you know, automate and do it all at once. Right, I don't think it's incredibly effective, but it's, you know, it's cheap. We're certainly seeing that email is trending downwards in a lot of ways. In part, the younger generation just isn't using email. They're texting each other and Facebooking each other and you know, Instagramming each other and so forth. So the but what I was going to say is I think a lot of people have missed that you want the sequential autoresponder texting, sequential autoresponder broadcast voicemail, and you want to put an inordinate amount of effort into getting them to pick up the phone and call you, and an inordinate amount of effort into trying to get them on the phone while they're right there staring at it, because hopefully maybe they'll answer it.
Which, by the way, Mr. Oliver, on the tutorials, it won't be the next one, but the one after. I'm actually going to show everybody how to integrate the immediately click the call me now button, things like that.
Mm-hmm.
But and also COM100 live chat, which is absolutely free. And now they even have live chat. Even has iPhone, iPad, and Android apps that you can just have on your cell phone, and while somebody's on the website, they can initiate a chat session with you, and it'll go straight to your phone, you know, straight to wherever you are. So exactly what you're describing is, you know, I'm going to help everybody kind of leverage at least three different pieces of technology to try to do something while somebody's actually on your website. So you're totally right. If you can get them then, that's the best time in the world you can get to talk to them, you know?
Yeah. And, you know, no amount of trying to automate it replaces talking to a human being, you know, on the phone, or better yet, face-to-face. And so you want to keep in mind that all of this other stuff is just to try to stir up enough interest in them to get them to pick up the phone and call you or show up in your facility. The other element to that, by the way, is that I'm sure it's not as much of a problem with everybody in the call. But the martial artists in general don't answer their phones, and generally the trend of everything that's going on applies to even fairly, you know, robust businesses as well. Jeff Smith was complaining about this recently. You know, we've got all of his staff out doing so much external promotional activities, they're not answering the damn cool phone. So if we wrestle up people to call them, and my staff for years, by the way, I doubt if it's changed, was that most moms for kids call between 9:30 and 11 a.m. So what happens is that they take the kids to school, sort their Valpak coupons, their list of things to do, and their, you know, post-it notes and all that stuff, and then do one of two things. They go home and sit at the kitchen table and do their follow-up, or they go to work. And if they go to work, they check in with the boss, they check in on things that came in on their email overnight, and then they take care of all their personal outbound calls or outbound, you know, stuff on websites from work. So regardless, you've got to be able to feel that in the morning, not just, you know, at 3 or 4 or 5 o'clock in the evening when you have prime time classes. So one of the things we should walk everybody through are some of the applications like Ring Central and Line 2 and JackRabbit or Cricket or, I mean, there's several internet-based phone systems that probably are a good solution for some of the people on the call too, which is, just to explain what it is that if you're not familiar, if you set up, like we're using Ring Central for NAPA. I'm using Line 2 for some of the schools. But what you can do is you can program it where you, when the phone, your phone gets answered, is it can go to a menu, just like if you call AT&T, if you're calling for A, press 1, if you're calling for B, press 2, if you're calling for C, press 3. If somebody calls our 800 number for the school, it goes through a short menu like that and automatically routes to the location that's closest. So in a multi-school environment, that's one solution. But the other thing that it does is you can program, let's say, three different cell phones. So that if somebody is calling to inquire for lessons, is it automatically rings, let's say, the program director and the two, the receptionist and the assistant, automatically rings the school phone plus the two or three different cell phones. And whoever answers first has now gotten the call. So, you know, in times that you're not normally at the school, you could program to clear, you know, if you're a student who needs, you know, information about X, Y, and Z, press 1. If you're inquiring about starting lessons or starting training with the school, press 2. When they press 2, it automatically goes out to 3 or 4 different people's phones. So that whoever answers the phone first gets it. Yeah, go ahead.
Excuse me, sir.
What service is that that you can send out to three different phones at the same call?
Well, there's a bunch of them, but two that we've used, one is called Ring Central, and the other one is called Line 2, or it's Talk to Me.
Okay, thank you.
Talk and then the number 2.
Yeah, I think that's right. Talk, T-O-K, letter 2, me.com. And the iPhone app that they have is called Line 2. And again, a lot of these are, you know, they have iPhone apps, Android apps, iPad apps. You know, the school phone can ring true to your iPhone or your iPad, all that stuff. But what I find useful is having the ability for it to go out to two or three people at once. So now, like in our case, a lot of times we may have the program director out in an elementary school teaching gym classes, but then we have an instructor who's you know, running errands or doing something like that, and then that person can get the phone. You know, we've got one right now where it rings to the branch manager and rings to the receptionist, so whoever gets it first has it. Now, it does raise the issue of makes it even harder to keep track of intro calls because somebody might be in their Jeep, you know, on the other side of town when they're taking an info call. So you do have to, if you're going to do that, you have to prep the staff, buy them little, you know, buy them little notebooks to keep with them at all times, you know, have them write it down and keep track of it and then aggregate it all at the end of the night. But it does solve some of that problem of the phones not getting answered.
Well, in the Charles Lansing, a lot of those cases, like Google Voice is an example, or Talk to Me, or even Ring Central, basically what's happening is the phone calls are going through a virtual PBX. And one of the upsides of using any of those three applications is that it tracks all the calls.
Mm-hmm.
So you actually don't, if you either log in and look at the dashboard or have an email to you, you know exactly how many people dialed that number. And what, like with, when you're setting up a secondary number, something with a find me feature like Google Voice or whatever, where it's going to go find you at whatever number you're at or whatever the case is, you have that event is tracked inside the thing, you know, and it gives you a unique phone number. So you use that phone number for just marketing, for example. Like let's say, for example, and it's overcomplicated, but let's say, for example, I'm going to do a lot of direct mail this year. I use this phone number just for direct mail. Now you also have an ability to track every time somebody called from a direct mail campaign, you know exactly how many times that happened this year. You know, so I mean, it gives you that expanded functionality, but it does actually simplify the ability to track how many times that line rang, you know, and what the outcome of those calls are. It's a little bit hinkier to figure out like who actually got it, you know.
Yeah.
The event is tracked, which is actually very useful, you know.
Right. Well, and you can overlay things. So you could have a Google Voice phone number that's only being used for one type of marketing that automatically routes to the school's phone number. And the school phone number is set up to, say, the Talk to Me app, where then it routes every info call to, you know, and these things can be defined by time of day, by the way. So you can define from 7 a.m. To noon, route it to these three calls, and from noon to 9 p.m., route it to the school, and if it doesn't answer, route it to these two other phones. You know, I've got some of the schools where it'll route to the school phone, but the receptionist just went to take a pee or something, and now it rings on somebody else's handheld and gets answered at 7 o'clock at night, where otherwise it would have gone to voicemail. So a lot of times this is just a solution, and it's a solution, the problem of which is fixing, making sure a live human being always answers your phone, because the thing that we're trying to accomplish with all of the marketing is get them to walk in or get them to call you. And even when we're going from offline, let's say you've got a bandit signs out that have your website on it, you're going from offline to online, the real reason for them to be online is to capture a lead and then to call you. But then if you let them go to voicemail, and that's always been death, but it's really death now, because if somebody goes to voicemail, you've got to realize they don't answer their phone, you know, in great part anymore. So you get a message and they leave you their phone number. I mean, what the hell good does it do, right?
Any questions about that? No? Pretty straightforward.
And again, on the online part of this, I'm going to walk through a few of those pieces of technology in a couple of webinars, too. So there'll be a resource available for you on that stuff as well. So.
Well, and part of this becomes, see, if I was in the mode of, you know, I'm buying newspaper ads and sending out direct mail, and all of my traffic is coming inbound to the school, it's a lot different than if I'm in the mode where I'm out at the JC's, Kiwanis Club, I'm at the ExxonMobil's corporate headquarters doing a little self-defense fitness seminar. Once I transition where I'm doing a lot of external in the community marketing, is it creates another problem. Do I go hire somebody who's going to be in the school from 9 a.m. to, you know, to 3, and then somebody else is going to be there from 3 to 9 just to sit there and answer the phones and field walk-ins? If I have a busy location where a lot of people are walking in, it's probably worthwhile. If I have a kind of hidden location, there's probably other solutions to making sure the phones get answered. And again, another one of those is utilizing Pat Live. And that would work real well in this kind of context, because you can have it ring to two or three phones, and then if those phones don't answer, it can, you know, back up forward over to Pat Live, and then you can have Pat Live answer the phone from, say, 9 p.m. to, you know, 8 a.m. or something like that, and now you've got 24-hour coverage. Okay, so let's talk more thoroughly about one other subject real quick, unless there's any specific questions from anybody at this point. I know we have a pretty good number of people on the call now, so does anybody have anything very specific right now? Or, and they have to star 6 to be for us to be able to hear them correctly.
Yes, sir. Mr. Oliver, this is Hi.
Yeah, hi.
Hey, I was gonna get your input. Well, we had talked a little bit about in-house dating with the staff, and I don't know if you know what happened with Lloyd Urban's association.
I do.
And stuff. Anything that pops up for you? I know we've talked about LaValle's organization, different organizations and stuff. Is there any recommendations you have for this that pops up to you right now?
Well, yeah. You know, the thing that you have to be is you have to be unreasonably, unrelentingly, and unbendingly black and white about what's permissible and what's not. Because as soon as it becomes a gray area, what happens is people push the borders and then you end up with problems. And you know, to clarify for everybody on the call, I don't think it matters what your market is. So, Hi, if you're in the, let's say that your primary business was adult men, 28 to 40, Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu, it's not okay for your female receptionist to date one of the guys in the school, right? Now, we all know the sexual harassment type of problems, you know, tend to be reversed, right? So it's the male instructor running a cardio kickboxing program, and now he's trying to hit on three different students. Or you're running the kids program, and the cute mom comes in, or worse yet. And it was, by the way, it was just in the news yesterday, I think, up in the Northeast. There was a 53-year-old adult male instructor arrested for raping, statutory rape. There's difference at that age, a 13-year-old. So it's endemic to our industry, and I think most of us are, it's not that we're going to deal much with, you know, the borderline pedophilia thing. What we are going to deal with a lot is we're going to deal with 21-year-old instructor hitting on a 17-year-old, and we're going to deal with the 32-year-old instructor, married or unmarried, who suddenly has a little following in the class, and either
you know, to the point of hating and, you know, relationships with those people, or almost just as destructive is going across the border and into suggestive comments and to, you know, sexual innuendo and so forth. Either one of those things is just death in a school. But again, what I mean by that is you've just got to have a no tolerance, this stuff doesn't happen type of environment in your school. And, you know, let me give you, it wasn't last meeting, it was a couple of meetings before. Carol, you had really brought up some pretty graphic, disgusting examples that you've lived through or had friends live through. But if you let there be a little crack in the armor, you know, a real life example is, you know, standing in the office and all the classes out there in the slits and the instructor comments what a cute ass she has and why she's, you know, it's a nice angle. If you let that kind of comment play without immediately addressing it, and if you let that kind of environment fester where people think that that's okay, is it very quickly can get out of control. So you've got to be unrelenting and completely and totally intolerant. And again, you'll come across tons of opportunity for the gray areas where it really, you know, by any objective standard, isn't that big a problem. But I'll tell you right now is, you know, we're in an environment where at all levels, whether it's corporate America, the government, people suing for sexual harassment, you know, if there's a gray area, you know, it's a felony conviction, not a turn a blind eye. We're in an environment that there just isn't any tolerance out there in the environment. I mean, to the point where, you know, the CEO of Best Buy ended up resigning because he was dating one of the executives of the company. And, you know, Microsoft is currently being sued for the same thing that, you know, Bill Gates met his wife because she was an employee of Microsoft. There was an interview with him recently where he's kind of sheepish about, well, how'd you guys meet? Well, we met the company, and then he goes, oh, well, you know, that was before, back when it was okay. So we really are in an unforgiving environment right now. But you've just got to create an environment, including the contract up front with every staff member, where they understand that that's just off limits. You know, the school is not a dating pool. You're not finding a date here. You know, well, once they're a student, you know, it's somebody who is not somebody who is available to you. I mean, you've got to really be clear on that up front. Hi, does that help, or is it a more specific question?
No, that's great.
Okay. But the part of it is, and I don't know, did I send you over that employment contract?
No, we haven't received it.
Okay, I will, Toby, if you'll remind me, I'll send a couple of examples out to everybody. And before I do, I want to give the disclaimer. One is I'm not an attorney, and two is every state is different. So you've got to take whatever the base level is and then run it through an attorney who's familiar with this stuff. But part of the reason you're doing the contract up front is to protect yourself against being sued. And to have had the conversation with the employee of what's allowed and what's not allowed. The only way really to police it in your school is you've got to be eternally vigilant of what kind of culture you're developing in the school and what kind of interaction, interplay, innuendo, jokes, what kind of things are tolerable, and shutting down any of the things that even are a little bit of a gray area to push over the line. The other thing that you have to do is you just have to be eternally vigilant on paying attention to what's going on. You know, over the years, you know, the joke was among my staff is that, you know, I must have videotapes and audio recorders running in every crevice and the orifice of the school, because I just knew everything that was going on. But it wasn't that was happening. I was just observant. You know, I'd walk in and I'd see the instructor has a little black X on his hand from some club he went to, no idea where it's at. And then I'd look over in the little coupon, brown belt, had the same X on her hand. Well, pretty obvious what's going on. They were at the same place at the same time. You know, I'd walk in and the instructor who usually has the big, you know, high school class ring on, doesn't have his class ring on, and then there's the brunette over there who has his class ring around her neck. I mean, you've just got to be continually vigilant on paying attention to what's going on and nipping problems like that in the bud on the way in. Anybody have anything to add to that? Toby, I know ATA has done an admirable job of really clarifying and putting together written policies for their organization nationally and all kinds of stuff like this. Of course, they've had huge problems, too, with a number of locations that they have. They've had a fair number of scandals at the newspapers. And, of course, an organization that big, you're going to have that. There's just nothing you can do.
Yeah, well, I mean, and you're right. I mean, there are an awful lot of internal systems that they implement, so much so. I mean, to go so far as to say things like this, and again, this obviously can't apply in 100% of the cases, but think about how deeply ingrained this type of culture has to be to say stuff like this. Things like, we don't want you to have a bathroom in your martial arts school bigger than, you know, 5x5, because two people could fit in there too easily. You know, we don't want you to have any office space that has a door on it that doesn't also have a window that will always be open, you know, that can always be seen through. You know, things like that where you don't have even spaces inside your facility where a staff member and a non-staff member can go and close the door. You know, things like that.
Mm-hmm.
Again, is that possible to police in multiple locations? Not really. You know, is it possible with 800 locations? Is it possible that you can manage all that? No. But that level of culture is, I think, something that's pretty important. You know, and again, it's an absolutely inflexible, you know, rule that, you know, you do not have relationships outside the school. I mean, that's the deal. You don't go drinking with, you know, people. You don't go to dinner with them. You don't. You know, it just doesn't happen, and it has to be that inflexible. And the other piece of it, I would say, is there's a program that actually, ironically enough, the Boy Scouts of America developed, and it's called the Youth Protection Standards. And I can send that around to everybody if you like. If it would be useful for everybody, I'll send it around. But the BSA, again, you know, they've had their own problems, as any large organization is going to have, you know, problems. But the BSA is actually, that system is what ATA basically adopted to sort of build their systems on. And it's actually a pretty good set of standards. A lot of it has to do with too deep leadership. You know, you can never have a paid staff member in a building with a student where there aren't two people on staff, you know, things like that. So there are a lot of mechanisms and systems in place like that do its best to try to insulate you from a situation happening, to be a deterrent and those types of things. I think, you know, the reality of it, I think, as you said, Ms. Culver, the reality is, even so, can you possibly be everywhere at once? Can you possibly have every inch of the building surveilled? You know, can you possibly eliminate this from ever possibly happening? No. But definitely, I think the culture has to be that deep. It has to be that inflexible. That, you know, I remember I had an instructor. In fact, he still works in the martial arts industry. He works for a gear company now. But I hired an instructor from another ATA school, and similar situation to what you just described. But I heard just a passing comment. And he was a great guy, nice dude, great martial artist. You know, a good guy. And I heard this just passing comment from one of the adults who was the parent of the student about going to the local wing place to have wings, right? And, I mean, literally it was like, you know, it was like breath on the wind. And it took me literally 8 seconds, you know, to pull him off the floor and take him back into the office. And I said, Sean, listen, you can't go out with these people, you know. I don't care if it's wings. I don't care if it's a Coke. You know, I don't care if it's a 7-Up. We don't do that, you know. It's the nature of being, you know, friendly but not familiar. You know, you don't ever want to see what the inside of his car looks like. You don't want to know what you know, what kind of drinks he likes. You don't want to know any of that stuff. You know. But I don't know. I think that's really the deal. Again, is there any way to completely insulate yourself and completely protect yourself from this type of stuff? Not really. You know. But I think you want to push the ball up the hill pretty far.
Well, the way that you protect yourself ahead of something happening, if it does, is you're a pillar of the community. There's never been any question about your reputation. There's never been any question about any of your key staff members. There's never been any question about the veracity of the business. You're out doing charitable fundraising, charitable activities. You've got students out at the local homeless shelter. All of those things build pillars of stability and credibility that ultimately lead to people giving you the benefit of the doubt. And so you've got to really build the pillars for the school. And in a multiple school environment, it's even more important to be building the pillars of the organization so that you're really ingrained in all of the local organizations that really have that kind of credibility. And, you know, in a kid's school, what you're worried about is any appearance of impropriety with an underage child. In an adult school, it's much more difficult, truthfully. I had a lot more problems with all of this stuff back when I had 1,500 adults. Because now it's much more gray. I've got a part-time instructor, black belt, who wants to date a 23-year-old gold belt female. Well, all of those things lead to lots of different problems, including the problem of the position of authority and the implication of there being some level of harassment. So you've got to be real stern on what is and what isn't allowed, and then to recognize, I mean, there's a lot of gray areas around the fringes, but you've just got to be real clear and real black and white, or else it ends up becoming real problematic.
That's right. We've gone so far in a lot of inside the APA organization. There were a lot of locations where literally we went so far as to eliminate changing rooms.
Yeah, yeah.
And not just for the sake of the room itself, but consider for just a moment. And, you know, a changing room full of students and the instructor goes in and changes. Okay, well,
yeah.
Now...
Well, I always had a changing room for the staff.
Right.
Yeah.
And here, by the way, was the catalyst for the entire thing. And again, unfortunately, what you just described, I think, is what all of us really should be doing. In fact, frankly, probably from a NAP standpoint, maybe in a couple of months, we should probably do something in general terms like this.
Yeah.
Some sort of a cooperative relationship with some type of an anti-abuse organization or something like that. But here's what catalyzed that particular rule, right? Or I would not say rule, but there were many locations that had changing rooms at the time that we, you know, influence was exerted to get that to change, right? And it was this. It was a completely innocent instructor who was accused of, you know, some sort of sexual impropriety with a student who basically it was a mom who had a relationship with the owner of the school who then had a bad breakup. You know, it was a vindictive thing. It was, you know, whatever. So she got her friend, right, who was a student, who had been in the changing room with the instructor a couple of times to fabricate a story about sexual misconduct, but this child had intimate knowledge of the physical markings on the instructor's body that, when mentioned in court, sealed his fate.
Yeah.
Right? So even without an argument about how this young child could possibly have known he had a mole in such and such a position, you know, why the hell should that student ever have that knowledge, right?
Yeah.
So that was really what the conviction was built from, was why should this, you know, 9-year-old or 11-year-old or whatever the case is, have that knowledge at all? you know.
Mm-hmm.
So just you know, I don't think it helps anything, but just as an example, you know, I think that's kind of the level that we're talking about, you know.
Well, yeah, and I mean, and there's again, on the adult side, there's nothing worse than the instructor is dating three different students. And, you know, I mean, it only has one of two outcomes. They get married or one of them drops out, right? So you've got to be eternally vigilant on things like that. You know, the LaValle thing was probably the worst case scenario of just creating an environment where it was not only accepted but applauded towards sexual conquest, and I have never seen anything that leads me to believe that it was in fact underage, but it was just, you know, I mean, every mom and every adult female student over, you know, 18 was a target. That's just the worst possible scenario, and it's just unethical. I mean, it should be like the psychiatrist, where you're just not allowed to do that. It really has to be at that level. Again, I mean, it's, you know, and I see instructors who, you know, the martial arts is rife with ego, and you know, and it's satisfying to the ego to be you know, have lots of students attracted to you, but as soon as you let that start cross that boundary, it can destroy your business. And again, it doesn't have to be a claim that a 25-year-old instructor was, you know, statutory rape of a 15-year-old, or it doesn't have to be a claim that it was an instructor inappropriately touching a 7-year-old. It can be, you know, the 35-year-old instructor is making inappropriate and unwanted sexual advances towards students. And on the, you know, in the old days, you didn't worry about that blowing up legally. Today, you worry about it blowing up legally. You know, what you worried about then was it just created such an undercurrent of dissension and had such an unethical tone to it that it could destroy the school. Nowadays, you know, that could be a multi-million-dollar lawsuit.
Yeah,
well.
And by the way, I mean, we are running out of time, and I don't want to sound like I'm being an advocate for Lloyd, but if you really look at kind of, if you really kind of dig into what really happened, I mean, literally, Lloyd has become a target for this thing because he's high profile, and really, you know, we don't really know the culture that he had set up in his organization. You know, we know Lloyd relatively well, and Lloyd kind of is a pretty good guy, right? And, you know, it's possible that he was taking a lot of these precautions. It's possible that he had a deep culture of you know, non-contact and non-relationships and things like that. All that's very possible. In a lot of cases, he's handled the media pretty poorly once the thing hit. But a lot of the accusations and a lot of the stories that have come out are trying to paint a picture of Lloyd with an agenda, right? So the only thing I'm saying about that is that could happen to any of us, right? Anybody with a big enough axe to grind can go try to dig up stories that are tangentially connected to us, like the story about Lloyd's former Sambo instructor being convicted of something at one point or another, or accused of something at one point or another. What the hell does that have to do with Lloyd? You know, it doesn't have anything to do with them, but someone with an agenda is trying to paint a picture, right? So again, you know, any one of us could be in a situation like that. Your initial recommendation to be in front of it is the best strategy. You know?
Well, you know, I wasn't trying to address that specific situation. The you know, if you take LaValle situation, is, you know, I don't have any evidence and don't believe that there was anything about, you know, him molesting underage kids, although that was one of the accusations. I do believe, and I know firsthand, that he created an environment where sexually targeting adult students and parents was out of control. And so, you know, if you've already created that environment and then there's an accusation of something else, it's pretty easy for it to stick. And the other stuff was creating its own, you know, a rash of problems. You know, in Lloyd's case, is, you know, you can't control the fact that, you know, and these weren't even staff members, these were, you know, students with another student. But what you can control is you can control the environment, you can control the culture of the organization. As I understood it, one of the things is he went from a spike team being developed from within internal to the school and a group of people who were paying $1,000 or $1,200 a month to be part of this, to taking in other people's students who had, to, you know, differing backgrounds, didn't have a shared culture. And especially in that MMA arena of what he had, you know, you can pretty quickly dilute a strong culture into one that's pretty wacky in a hurry. And I think there's probably a lot of problems with that. The two things I do see is that the PR after the fact was horribly mishandled. And number two is, you know, he certainly had a lot of people out to get him. And in the internet age, it's fairly easy for rumors, founded or unfounded, facts, true or otherwise, to be twisted and turned and used against you if you're not very careful on how you deal with it. Or even if you are careful about how you deal with it,
exactly.
there's some of it you just cannot control. You know, but I will say, I mean, you know, now 30 years later, you know, I have yet to see a very high performing, high profile, successful school operator who somewhere along the line didn't have the accusation or the reality among some staff member or student, and occasionally themselves. You know, I gave the example of Keith Hafner having that with his brother. You know, in my operation, I mean, I've luckily never hit, you know, the media. But I mean, I've had the 20-year-old instructor that I caught with a 13-year-old girl, you know, only partially clothed, and I've had a 35-year-old instructor accused of molesting an 8-year-old boy or attempting to molest an 8-year-old boy. I could go on and on and on with various things that, you know, for whatever reason, I managed appropriately to the point that never ended up becoming a problem. But, you know, there's a series of those things. I've had the 18-year-old instructor accused of molesting a 15-year-old girl. I mean, it just, you know, when you have enough employees over enough years in a big enough operation, you're going to have that kind of stuff. And in our case, we were so ingrained in the community and had such a positive reputation that none of it stuck as something that was an organizational problem. Plus, I don't think there was ever anybody in the history who was more stringent, black and white, and unforgiving about things like that than I had been over the years. And so it was an anomaly. But you do have to be aware and careful. I mean, you know, if you have an event and, you know, and somebody who's put up on stage is scantily dressed, it can be a problem. You've got to be careful about how people are allowed to present themselves. You've got to be allowed, you know, careful about the, you know, the teenage instructors. You know, the girls come in dressed scantily, or the boys come in with something suggestive on the shirt. You've got to control every aspect, or else it can evolve out of control. But Toby, we're way out of time. Unless anybody else has any questions. No.
I think we just got a lot of work to do.
Yeah. I mean, it's been a great conversation. And the other thing we need to follow up on next is really the, you know, 22 ways of marketing with the new grand opening and so forth. Because it is. Either schools looking to immediately add 100 students goes back to the marketing boot camp we did last year, or schools doing new grand openings. There's a lot of avenues. In fact, it might be worth volunteering. When's our next group call scheduled for?
Inner circle only, or bigger form and inner circle will have a call next week.
Okay. Well, on that call, perhaps we should really walk through grand opening marketing and re-grand opening for a school marketing, because we didn't get very in-depth with it, and it's been a frequent conversation that I've been having recently.
Sure, absolutely.
Okay. Sounds good. So we'll promise to cover that in depth next week. Same time, same place, right?
Okay, guys.
Okay,
thanks. Thank you, everybody. Thank you, sir.
Goodbye.
Thanks, everybody.